And we are ready.
Okay, at 7:21, we're going to call the foundation meeting to order, and we'll start with a roll call.
Director Shore.
Here.
Director Borja.
Here.
Director Redfield.
Here.
Director Rogers.
Here.
Director Matthews.
Here.
Vice President Lara.
Here.
And President Zimmer.
Here. Do I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
I motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Director Borja, seconded by Director Shore. And is there any discussion? All in favor of approving the agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? This time we have comments from the audience on items that are of public interest and under the jurisdiction of the foundation but are not on today's agenda. We limit speakers to no more than 3 minutes. The board, of course, cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. If there are items on the agenda you wish to speak with, too, you can do that when that agenda item comes up. So are there any public comments on foundation items not on the agenda?
We do have one, but she's not in the room, apparently.
But they got trouble!
Maybe it's on the agenda.
If it's on the agenda, then it's not now.
Okay.
Oh, it's not on the agenda. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Heather Bicona. I'm the CEO of Lift Your Rise, and I just wanted to make a comment about a couple of things. Folks in the room, many of you work together with us and partner with us. We just completed a week of action planning with more than 40 local partners, regional, national, and local partners, on advancing our plan to increase the supply of affordable housing by 10,000 units. And I know that we've talked to you guys about this before, and we've had varying degrees of support, and we're really excited by looking at some agenda items where we think that there's a leak, but really thinking about the ways for the district to be especially engaged in this work. And specifically, as we think about the folks that were in the room earlier and other issues like homelessness, we really see a critical link. The supply of affordable housing is really critical to the issues that were talked about earlier. And the second thing I just wanted to comment about briefly, and totally not plan to comment here, but just from listening to the conversation earlier, is that Lift Your Rise has a research partnership with USC School of Public Policy, and some folks here might be aware of that, and we have a data portal. So we really love and invite the idea of potentially partnering there. We actually just finished ourselves a health needs assessment, a community assessment that we just received a draft of it in the last couple of weeks. And really, we've laid the groundwork and foundation for partnership, so we absolutely open and welcome partnership in that way, and we would be really interested in continuing to figure out how to align really strongly here. We see that housing, to us, if we think about the two areas that Lift Your Rise organizes, and housing stability and economic opportunity, we organize in these areas through extensive community listening and data analysis. We really see these as the central determinants of health, and we think really critical to the district's work, especially as the district has expanded its catchment, and this work finds its home in a different place across the valley. We know in the East Valley that the subject of Polanco's and mobile home parks is really, really critical. And as we move across the valley, the issue is really similar to housing affordability issue for Coachella Valley residents.
I did not understand the context of 10,000 housing units.
Yeah, excuse
Sorry,
me.
I was talking really
excuse me. We're in public comment. We're not supposed to actually respond. Are you finished with your remarks?
So maybe I'll talk more about 10,000 units. No, I'm going to talk about my remarks.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Is there any other public comments on things not on the agenda? Okay. Actually, housing is on the agenda later. So. Mm-hmm. All right. We now move to the consent agenda. There are board minutes of the last foundation meeting and minutes from the finance and administrative meeting from September, and the July and August financial statements. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I would move it.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. CEO report.
No, not this time.
Okay. And the program committee minutes are there on item F for your review. The finance and administrative minutes are there for your review. And we'll move on now to the behavioral health Vermont Committee and the report that's going to be given. Who is going to present this?
You go.
Good evening. My name is Shayla Wilson, and this is my colleague, Mindy Friedman, and we're from EvalCorp. As you may or may not know, we were contracted to conduct a mental and behavioral health needs assessment of the Coachella Valley to assess the needs of its residents. I've spoken with many of the board members already, and your feedback provided very great insight for informing this process. I'd also like to say a special thanks to our ad hoc committee and the Desert Healthcare District staff for their dedication and commitment to making this needs assessment a success. So this is a high-level overview of what we'll be talking tonight. We're going to cover project goals, key findings, recommendations, and a little bit about next steps. We'll also have about, hopefully, 10 minutes at the end of this for some questions and answers. So we'll begin by talking about the project goals and the needs assessment process. So at the beginning of this project, we identified three goals, and the first was to identify the mental and behavioral health needs of the Coachella Valley residents, then to understand gaps in available mental and behavioral health service provision, and to finally develop recommendations to how to best address those needs. This is an overview of our community engagement and data collection timeline. The project started in April of 2019, and from then until July, we engaged in multiple community engagement efforts, including interviews with key stakeholders, a provider survey, and focus groups. We also analyzed and recorded secondary data research on an ongoing basis. Four reports on these community engagement efforts were submitted to the Ad Hoc Committee and Desert Healthcare District staff for review. Any additional information and details that you might be interested in at the end were provided to you all in the form of our summative report and appendices. I'll now cover a little bit about the service area demographics and some mental and behavioral health key indicators. So the first demographic point we'd like to share with you is about the Hispanic Latino population in the Coachella Valley. Over half of residents in the Coachella Valley identify as Hispanic Latino. As you can see, they're largely concentrated when you get closer to the Imperial County. And what's important about this, though, is that this is part of a large part of the area that's recently been incorporated under the Desert Healthcare District's new boundaries. The second indicator I'd like to talk about is poverty rates in the Coachella Valley. So, similar to the Hispanic Latino population, these poverty rates are also concentrated as you get closer to the Imperial County. There are high rates as well in the Desert Hot Springs Sky Valley area. And as you can see, a third of youth, so those 18 and under, live 100% below the federal poverty line. Adults also experience poverty at high levels in the Coachella Valley. About 17% live 100% below the federal poverty level. Additionally, looking at SNAP benefits that are currently accessed, you can assume that there might be a gap between need and current use of these benefits. We'd also like to talk about, again, a couple of mental and behavioral health indicators. So this is from the California Healthy Kids Survey. It reports out on grades 9 and 11 for the most recently available data in each of the three school districts. It looks at the number of youth that have experienced chronic sadness, hopelessness, and have considered suicide in the past year, in addition to alcohol or drug use in the past month. Across three districts, the rates are pretty similar. But most importantly, that we'd like to point out is that nearly a third of all youth in these school districts, grades 9 and 11 again, experienced chronic sadness or hopelessness in the last 12 months. The second indicator we'd like to talk about is the number of deaths by suicide among youth in Riverside County. So using the most recently available data for the past 5 years, 2013 to 2017, we're able to show the number of deaths by suicide for youth 5 to 14, 15 to 19, and 20 to 24 years old. As you can see, there have been steady increases in the transitional age youth, that's those top two lines, the 15 to 19 year olds and 20 to 24 year olds. We're now going to talk about a few key select findings. Again, as I mentioned earlier, any additional information can be found in our summative report and its appendices. So we touched on briefly our community engagement efforts, but we want to dive into it a little bit further here. So we conducted 23 interviews with key stakeholders, 7 of which were with Desert Healthcare District board members. They were very vital in informing this needs assessment process. We also did a provider survey with 73 individuals and 5 focus groups with 48 participants. We made great efforts to ensure that our data collection efforts were representative of the community and that community members were provided ample opportunity to participate. Through the community engagement, many mental and behavioral health concerns were listed, but 5 were indicated most frequently as a priority. And these were substance use, depression, anxiety, stress, homelessness, and suicidal ideation. Additionally, participants in our community engagement were asked to identify what they thought were causes and contributing factors to poor mental and behavioral health. These 3 broad categories, socioeconomic status, poor physical health, and violence, were identified. Additionally, bullying under the violence category was the most highly mentioned cause or contributing factor of poor mental and behavioral health through these community engagements. As you can see here, we again have some California Healthy Kids survey data, but this is for grades 7, 9, and 11, again for the most recently available years. As you can see, about a third to a quarter of youth in these school districts had experienced harassment or bullying on school property in the past year. Additionally, 9 of the 11 participants in our transitional age youth focus group, so again, that's that 18 about to 25 year old group, stated that they had been bullied at some point. The level of concern that was raised by participants in our focus groups, additionally parents and those in our community health worker focus group also raises as an issue, indicates that this topic may warrant special attention. Participants also identified barriers to care, but the barriers to care that stigma, attitudes, and beliefs may cause stood out most prominent. These barriers included cultural barriers among the Hispanic, Latino, and Black African American communities, the stigma experienced by those that identify as LGBTQ+, and self-stigma. Many barriers to care were also identified as gaps in service provision. These gaps include a shortage of mental and behavioral health providers, poor timely access to services, high costs, limited transportation to services, and hours of operation that are inconvenient. So this map that I'm showing you here, first off, I don't want you to read that list on the left, so don't get too concerned about the small font. But this is a map that, one, shows the current zip codes within the Desert Healthcare District's boundaries, and it shows available mental and behavioral health service locations. So that's this list on the left. It's there to give you an idea of just how many services are illustrated on that map. There are some darker spots, and so they're clustered there, and so it doesn't really give you a good idea of the count. I do want to note that this isn't an inclusive list. There are many services that don't have addresses, so I couldn't map them, such as the mobile veteran van. There are also services that are accessed by residents outside of the Coachella Valley that I did not indicate here on this map. This next map is about medical service study areas. And so why I want to point this out, and we're going to talk about this for the next 2 slides, is that it's important to understand what these are, to understand mental health provider shortages, which I talked very briefly about on our gaps slide. But so these medical service study areas are designated by the state. And so they're to tell us about different types of medical shortages, such as primary care, dental, and then for our purposes, mental health care providers. 5 of those, numbers 1 through 5, are within the Coachella Valley, and the other 2 are outside, but it's highly likely that the residents in those areas are accessing services within the Coachella Valley. So this is the same map, I've just colored it a little differently, and it tells us about mental health provider shortages. So MSSA 1 and 2 have population-based shortages. And so what that means is that for a specific subpopulation, those areas don't have enough mental health providers. For MSSA 5, again, that one is within the Coachella Valley, they have a geographic-based shortage. And that means that the entire region does not have enough mental health providers. MSSA 3 and 4 do not have mental health shortages as identified by the state. And then finally, these two MSSAs outside of the Coachella Valley, they, similar to MSSA 5, have geographic-based shortages, again, meaning that there are not enough providers in the entire region, irrespective of population. So we did a lot of work on these reports and getting community engagement, and so we have some recommendations we'd like to share with you. And these were informed by the people we spoke to. We derived these recommendations from all the great feedback they provided to us. We do want to say that we recognize that some of these recommendations might already be efforts that are implemented currently by agencies in the Coachella Valley, but that they came up as recommendations because further efforts and resources might be required to adequately address them. Additionally, we want it to be understood that these recommendations are to be valley-wide collaborative efforts that should be undertaken by multiple agencies to be most effective. So let's talk about these four recommendations. Our first recommendation is to improve access to mental and behavioral health resources. Some of this includes providing services during non-traditional settings, reducing eligibility requirements, expanding low-cost service provision, and increasing the availability of same-day walk-in services, so improving timely access to care. Our second recommendation is focused on education and stigma reduction. To adequately reduce education and stigma reduction, our recommendation is that a public health model be utilized. So addressing this issue at multiple levels using multiple methods, such as social media, community campaigns with print media, and community-based sites, educating parents, educating providers, to really have a comprehensive effort to raise the education and awareness of community residents. Our third recommendation is about professional development, in building the competency of current mental and behavioral health service providers in the Coachella Valley. This could include providing crisis intervention training for first responders, increasing access to mental health first aid or MHFA, not only for adults, but for youth as well, and to provide cultural competency and trauma-informed training to, again, existing service providers in the Valley. Our final recommendation is about workforce expansion. If current and even future needs are to be met for Coachella Valley residents, then a great focus needs to be on growing the workforce of mental and behavioral health providers. This includes providing incentives for practitioners to move into or stay in the Coachella Valley, but it also means to expand opportunities for local students to become certified mental and behavioral health providers. So this quote here, I feel, illustrates what I mentioned at the beginning of our recommendation section, and it's that it's going to take a concerted multi-agency effort that's going to be valley-wide if we're going to address the needs of the Coachella Valley residents. So we've laid out a next step for you all here. To further delve into our findings and what we can do about it, we recommend that you attend our Learning Summit on October 3rd. It's an opportunity for key stakeholders and community partners to come together and communicate and discuss what partnerships exist and how to better engage in collective impact. And now we'll have time to take some questions.
Can we have the lights turned on, please? I wonder if you or Donna could just talk a little bit about the Learning Summit and the what Supervisor Perez is doing and how this is going to lead into that.
Yeah, I'm happy to do so. So the Learning Summit, Desert Healthcare District and Foundation, in collaboration with Supervisor Perez's office, is working to host this Learning Summit on October 3rd. We're going to again present the findings to a large group of service providers and key stakeholders in the Coachella Valley. And after that presentation, we're going to have breakout sessions. And so the idea behind these breakout sessions is we're going to pose some questions that should help us better strategize how we can effectively address mental and behavioral health needs in Coachella Valley. And so having people come together, having productive conversations and reporting out at the end. We also hope to leave the Learning Summit with some pledges, you might say, about desired efforts and commitments to really working on these issues.
Is it anticipated that there'll be some coordinating body to follow up on this after the Learning Summit? I mean, I'm looking at the model of the Homelessness Task Force, that recommendations were given. The task force then, the first recommendation was a collaborative process, and from that came the work of what CVAG was doing in terms of bringing together the cities, and in this case it would be various different kinds of organizations, so that we don't have the different silos, we know what's going on, coordination, et cetera, et cetera. So is there some anticipation, or are you just going to talk about it at the Green Summit and decide what's next?
And I think that's the goal. I'm Greg, or it is for those who don't know me, with Supervisor Perez's office. Through the working sessions, we're looking, one, to not only identify, there is actually some work being done in some of these fields, although still in silos like we experienced with other initiatives. So really getting more of a collaborative approach to how we address these. But I think one of the goals coming out of there is, what's going to be the follow-up? How do we establish a monitoring, whatever? I will say that the county right now, through public health, through behavioral health, is doing a huge suicide anti-bullying prevention thing, just literally kicked off, but it's involving the school system and all that, so that may be a role for county to play, but I think that's what we're really kind of using this Learning Summit to get out, is how do people see this moving forward, see this going, moving forward, again, to work in a more collaborative type approach.
So I'm sorry, one more question. Who's coming to the summit? Are the school districts coming? Or?
So it's a wide array of behavioral health specialists, medical providers, school employees, public health, and go on and on.
Okay.
Huh? And elected official representatives, all that. So it's a wide array of we really tried to target, it's the list that we've developed out of our office for the Green Ribbon Behavioral Health Committee, but in addition, ran it by Donna and Shayla and her team to make sure we were really encompassing the array of people that we need to be in that room.
I just wanted to say that over a year ago, this district approved a mental health consultant to help coordinate these different efforts with all the organizations. And I know that we have a job description or an RFP written, but I think we need to move forward with that coordination.
And even more importantly, I think we designated 1 million or 2 million?
2 million.
2 million that's been sent to the foundation to support behavioral health projects. And I hope we can start spending some of it in worthwhile ways. And again, I look at, although it's a different issue, I look at the way the homelessness issue was tackled, so that it's not just one entity that's working on it to prevent the silos, et cetera, comments.
Okay, I am very pleased to have participated on this ad hoc committee along with Carol and Yvette. I learned a lot. And I can definitely agree that this was a very comprehensive study. I appreciate the fact that you had so many people involved in different focus groups to ensure that you had good input and a wide array of agencies and services represented. To me, I think that this is a perfect example of the district taking a lead on mental health and behavioral health for our Coachella Valley. It was before my time when the position was talked about, but I really am really pleased to see that it has been talked about, and maybe that's something that we should pursue. I appreciate the fact that the county is taking the lead on some of these agencies. They have tremendous resources, but they have a lot of bureaucracy. And they also are not concentrating on the 4th District. I think the supervisor's office, Supervisor Perez, is really supportive of mental health, and I am so glad that he is taking the lead on this. But if we can support him in this, I think that he would be much more successful. And it's very easy to say we should not be duplicating services and we should be open to having collaborators, but it's a lot harder to practice that. So I just want to make sure that we go into this with that kind of mindset. On my day job as Regional Access Project Director, we were ready to start a needs assessment. And when I started participating on this committee, I said, wait a minute, why are we going to spend money when it's public dollars, just like the district, when they're going to do this? So we're eagerly anticipating this study to actually utilize it to help plan for resource distribution. So I'm really excited about it, and I hope that we can make some smart decisions and some good planning out of this. So thank you.
My question is, if you heard anyone talk about any faith institutions as their go-to place. I know that our faith leaders across the valley, I personally know a couple of them, have like very extensive training, professional training, some have degrees in behavioral health, in mental health, in therapy, they do marriage counseling, youth counseling, all sorts of other things, along with their church being places where you have Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, all sorts of different groups that may fit into yourself. Just curious.
No, that's a great question. Unfortunately, it didn't come up, and I remember us talking about this in your interview, and I almost anticipated it, and it didn't arise. That doesn't mean it's not somewhere that people go, and it could come up during our learning summit where faith leaders are there, and they're like, hey, we're there, we're providing services. And I think what this tells us is that people, and I didn't share too much about this, but people were largely unaware of resources in the Coachella Valley. Very few were listed in contrast to the list that I provided, which isn't even a comprehensive list. And so maybe people don't view faith institutions as mental health providers or as potential access points, and maybe that's something we need to address as if we do a campaign about raising awareness, as you know, some of these people could be resources for you, and so that might be why they didn't come up, is that they don't define them as such. No, yeah, of course.
Other than the survey data that you demonstrated about alcohol and substance abuse, was that treated as a mental health problem, as a category? Because I didn't see any reflection of that other than that which was reported by the people that were surveyed.
So alcohol and substance came up under the California Healthy Kids Survey, that's correct. And then it also came up through all three of our community engagements. So our interviews with key stakeholders, our surveys with providers, and our focus groups.
Because there were no recommendations relative to that in specific.
No, nothing specifically to that.
Thank you.
My last question, anything about people traveling across the border? I know my mom took me to a psychologist in Mexicali because she had like dual insurance, and it allowed her to. Any comments of that nature?
I think the only conversation that really came up about leaving the Coachella Valley was people actually coming into the Coachella Valley or using the clinicas. De Salud del Pueblo, they were the only people that talked about people going into Imperial County, and that's about as far of reach. A couple people talked about 29 Palms coming down to get services, but nothing really was discussed.
One more point I wanted to make, and that's we didn't really mention inpatient services, and that's been an issue in that there have been no inpatient services in the Coachella Valley for several years now. Acadia is building a inpatient facility in Indio, supposed to be open in 2021. And I understand they're also going to be adding some outpatient services, so that's very, very needed. And then the other thing is, I do think that education and helping the professional workforce, it's a big problem getting psychiatrists to move to the Coachella Valley. And We need to pay more attention to that. I know that Cal State is and COD is, but UCR with the medical school, I understand they might even start a psychiatry residency, things like that, which is one way to go for that. Any other director comments before we move on? Okay, thank you so much. And I wanted to thank...
Comments from...
Yeah, are there any public comments? Yes.
I just want to mention whether it's, you know, for the consideration of the board or at the summit, many of you probably already know that back in March, the state released its California Future Healthcare Workforce Report, and there are a number of recommendations in there that specifically have to do with mental and behavioral health and specifically around workforce issues. So there are things that we may want to pick up and see how can we link up with the state. Pilot project, other types of things to take advantage of, since they've identified that this area as a critical area for the future.
Right, that is true.
No, exactly. We talk about this a little bit in our report, utilizing HIPAA designation, so health provider shortage areas. There's a lot of opportunities to get grant funding, and so exactly, like finding areas where there's already work being done, even outside of the valley, to really ramp up any opportunities here, especially if we're resource poor in that specific area.
All right, any other, yes?
Just a comment on the recommendation. I think helping develop the professionals is a really important thing. I actually recently went through like my whole insurance benefits and who the providers are, and mental health was one of them. And I think I had a really hard time choosing or someone that I could see myself talking to, because I didn't see anybody that looked like me. And that eliminates a lot of the initial introduction, and you waste a lot of time. Every hour you're there, it's like every time your time is limited with that person. And as a young working professional, you have to manage your time and take the time to really go into to see any doctor, any medical health provider. So when you use most of your session to explain the background of how you were brought up, your culture, that really sets you back and kind of, in a sense, you have to think twice whether you want to move forward to another session or you want to look for another provider because you don't really see yourself identified. So I think that's one of the big things that I like seeing in the recommendations, that development for the providers right now, the profession, is really important.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other public comments? Yes.
I don't know if this would fall within, was research, but I think Coachella Valley Unified School District does a lot of work around restorative justice practices. So I'm curious to see if it was uplifted as like these informal settings that could be considered as supports for mental health. Yeah, actually, it did come up. The restorative justice practices in Coachella Valley Unified School District did come up in one of our interviews. And so we briefly touch on it here, but more in some of our other reports about school-based services and how they're going to be an important space to get youth access to services. They also weren't illustrated on our map because we're not going to put every school on our map, and it might misidentify how many services are available. But they really are a critical access point, especially for people with limited transportation or cost opportunities. We know the Latino Commission works hard to provide mental health services to a lot of the schools, and schools are looking into other options too.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're now gonna move on to old business. And first we wanna have an update on our Summer Homeless Survival Fund. And who's gonna do that?
So in the packet, you have a staff report that kind of gives a little history on how the cooling centers were developed through the county, and Greg Rodriguez has been very influential in that. The cities that have been involved, as well as CMAG, and then very importantly, CBRM, who has stepped up to operate the cooling centers through the summer. I don't have the exact numbers on the counts on that, but from the survival fund part of it, as of today, the The foundation has received $18,805 from the community, residents, businesses, etc. And so the match that comes from the foundation, it could be up to $50,000. The total amount that we've received that can be committed to the survival fund is $37,600. And to date has been expended about $28,000. $26,000 of that has gone to the Coachella Del Aire Rescue Mission and additional support from the funds that came from the county. So any questions regarding?
Okay.
Yes.
So is there any discussion, any plan to support the cooling centers after the September 30th close? Have we received any requests from other organizations?
We're going to talk about that in a second.
Oh, thank you.
All right. The next item has to do, actually there are two items that I was going to report on, and I had two documents that I prepared, and they're not here. So I'll try to do it from memory. The first was that I was asked to attend a meeting that Greg Rodriguez put together with the city council persons Holstead and Coors and city manager of Palm Springs, David Reddy, to talk about the next steps for a navigation center in the Western Valley. And I attended just to get information, and I wanted to bring back to the board whether or not the board wanted the district either as a director to participate and or the staff to participate in sort of the furthering the issue of navigation center with possibly some transitional housing and some permanent supportive housing, et cetera, et cetera. Some property had been identified, and especially now that Palm Springs is getting additional state funds, how that is going to move forward is important. Let me just mention again that the East Valley and the two shelters there very much want additional shelter, transitional and permanent shelter and navigation services in the West Valley so that they can take care of the people in the East Valley because their beds fill up with something like 30% or something like that of people from the West Valley. So I want to get some direction from the board as to whether we want the staff participate and get more information and specifically bring back proposals to the board on this next issue. I tried to do that as thoroughly as possible. Did you want to say anything, Greg, in terms of?
You've handled it perfectly.
Okay. And again, this is not to vote on funds or anything. It's basically to say the district wants to participate, and we might appoint a director to be part of it, and we have to give permission. We have to direct the staff to participate and the time. So I'd like to hear from
I think it's a
directors.
Good idea.
Good idea.
Okay, great.
Okay. Would this be something that the Barbara Poppy, what do you call it?
Yes.
First thing she asked for was a collaborative.
Exactly.
Would this be something that is tied to the collaborative or not tied to the collaborative?
Well, it certainly the collaborative wants some issues in the West, but the reality is when you're talking about property in Palm Springs, you're talking about Palm Springs and Cathedral City and Desert Hot Springs. And so rather than all the other cities being involved in those issues, especially now that Palm Springs has gotten some additional funds, we want to move it along a little quicker. So there's going to be, I believe, a sort of subgroup to begin to look at those issues. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and it still fits under the collaborative because, as Les said, is the services are needed in the West Valley. And the other nine cities that are involved, the county, the district, are all supportive of that. So it still does fit under the umbrella because we're providing services that benefit the whole valley as well.
The decision as to whether to put a facility in Palm Springs and or Cathedral City and or Desert Hot Springs is going to be made by those cities with some direction. And the question is, does the Desert Healthcare District want to participate in those discussions?
Well, I think it's a good place for the program committee to step in and help further those issues.
Right, and again, all I'm asking is that the board is going to allow the staff to bring it to the program committee and to bring it to the various committees, because they can't really do that on their own, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so the second issue is similar in that I attended I'm gonna get the words wrong, but there was a regional housing investment fund meeting with players from all over the Coachella Valley and the county, and people that are interested in creating an investment fund for housing, because there's such a large percentage of people that are paying more than 30% of their income for rent, and there's a term for that, rent burden. And so that work was starting. I attended just to get some more information, and one of the things I wanted to bring back to the board was, does the district want to participate in that? Now, let me just say my own, to me there are two issues. One is collecting the money, creating an investment fund, but the reality is there are other issues that I actually think the district can play a role. We know that, for example, one of the problems is some cities don't allow dense zoning, so that you can't build affordable housing. And many politicians, the city politicians, have to pass those variances or whatever, but sometimes they don't because the public, some of the public, doesn't want that. And I think the district, my personal opinion, is that the district has a role in educating the public that this is a health issue, that people without housing, it's a social determinant of health, they have health problems, and that affects the whole community. So although I'm not suggesting that the district right now is going to be involved in funding, I do think we have a role, as we've already said in our strategic goals, in educating the public about housing and the role of housing in homelessness and homelessness in health. So I wanted to again ask the board, does the district want to participate in future meetings of this group to see, and the staff too, to bring back to the board and to the program committee and various other committees possible projects or areas that the district foundation could participate in?
Yes.
Any other comments?
Same question as before. Is this something that's part of the collaborative or separate?
It's not really part of the collaborative. I am going to turn to Heather and Christy to explain it a little better than I did, but this is something that's been championed by Lift to Rise, and maybe you could.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Christy Holston with Lift to Rise. So we did invite President Zendel to our meeting to talk about a regional housing fund. This is through Lift to Rise's partnership with the County Economic Development Agency and the Housing Authority. And so that's our goal, to really catalyze the development of 10,000 affordable housing units in 10 years throughout the entire Coachella Valley through collective impact and collaborative action. And I think this is really relevant for the Desert Healthcare District. You're the largest funder in the Coachella Valley, and we came together with Lift to Rise, with the United Way, with the RAP Foundation, with other funders, with the Desert Healthcare District, to think about how do we change as a region how we're investing in housing and homelessness and kind of these root cause issues of poverty and inequality. And how can we think about that as a region? So this is definitely regional work that's collaborative, that everyone is welcome to participate in. And so just having your presence there and thinking through as a region, how are we funding these issues? What are the social determinants of health that we're all looking at? How are we cross-funding as a region? How are we aligned in our thinking around that, and developing a regional fund through outside investment into the Coachella Valley, and thinking about how to use the funding and the what's already here in the region, and then using that to catalyze outside investment as well. So it would be a catalytic kind of investment fund for the region. It's just at the beginning stages and thinking through with all of our partners. So Lift to Rise would very much like the Desert Healthcare District to be a thought partner in that, as someone who really, as an agency that really serves the whole population of the Coachella Valley.
Heather, did you want to add anything?
The only thing to add is just that we've engaged Nancy Andrews. Many of you might know her She's a retired CEO of the Low Income Investment Fund. And Director Zendel was able to meet Nancy when she started at the Low Income Investment Fund. They had $35 million. When she retired last year, they had $1.2 billion, billion with a B. And what she's working with is thinking about with folks like Sergio, who has Polanco Parks that have specific capital gaps, and other folks that have specific capital gaps. What she's looking at is, like Christy said, how can we, by scales of magnitude, there's always more money in the systems on the ground. We're not going to be able to subsidize our way out of this with philanthropy, but how can we all get together and build a catalytic fund that's going to push forward? The first thing we're going for is really 2,000 units. And so absolutely, we think that the healthcare district has a role to play in that. And again, like I said earlier, and I'm sorry, I didn't realize that this was an agenda item. I wouldn't have talked earlier. But it's really going to require all of us to work together to really be able to advance this. Director DeLara and Director Perez-Gill, I'm trying to think who else from the district, traveled to Fresno with us in May as we hosted an investment summit. And we're hosting, Carol, I'm sorry, I remember that you were there. So we're hosting a follow-up meeting next month on October 21st, and the thing we're really trying to consider now is with philanthropy investment at the bottom and then participation from cities and the county and other long-term lending, what can we do to MacGyver our way forward to the first 2,000 units? I won't go on about it, but you guys know that the city's lost their RDA money, and as we think about what are the significant interventions we can make, all the things that are on your agenda from behavioral health to homelessness, all of these things are compounded and worsened by the severe lack of affordable housing. Like, housing is really a linchpin in all of this, and we really all need to row together. So thank you so much, President Zendel. I didn't realize this was on the agenda, so thank you.
And let me just say again, one of the things, takeaways for me was that, yes, the money's important, you need the money, but it's hard to get developers to come in and build apartments for low income with reasonable rents when they have density issues and property area issues that they just cannot rent it for an amount that's affordable to people. And that takes educating politicians, which takes educating the public that this is a health issue. And so that's why I personally would like to see the district, at least to direct the district staff to look for ways that it's appropriate for us to participate.
Now I understand the 10,000 units.
Okay, I want to take it a step further, not to include a member of board on that work. I trust staff completely, but I think it sends a stronger message to have a member of the board serve on that. I won't volunteer because I'm already associated with the work, but I hope another board member will volunteer to serve on this work.
We made a $2 million decision based off of the Barbara Poppy report. Can I ask staff to take a look at the report and bring back the ties to both B and C? Just so we're very clear, like, yes, this is what national experts are telling us. This is what our investments have already said. This does fit in, right? We do have $2 million plus on the line. Maybe this is money that can be used or moved. Whatever the case, can I ask staff to, when you bring back these reports that Les is asking, that you look at the Barbara Poppy report and then help us identify that these two items fit into that report and her recommendation?
It's very clearly there.
I wasn't here when you were doing the Barbara, so I would think so.
Sergio, did you want to say something?
One important thing that I want to make a really great emphasis is that the role that the districts can play in this endeavor is also public policy. That's critical. And right now we're working with Lift to Rise to an introduction of a new ways to actually do streamlined processes for permitting that include allowing the construction of affordable housing in specific zoning and introducing the concept invoking the SB 35, already a law in California. That's going to be definitely a major role that the district can play. One example of also leveraging resources from the state level is that we actually worked with Assemblymember Garcia He led the introduction of 2056, AB 2056, specifically to help the mobile home park communities that we have here in the Eastern Coachella Valley. Now, we're waiting for the notice of funding availability that is scheduled to be $43 million at the state of California to complete 4 mobile home parks. That's one typical example of how can we actually start thinking about public policy at the local level, but also at the state level. And the district can have an incredible role in that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so Conrado, do you feel some direction from the board as to
yes, participate?
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you very much. New business, and this is the money, of course, we sent from the district to the foundation, and now there's another action item. And who's going to present this?
I move to approve.
Second.
There's a motion and second. Is there any discussion?
No.
Roll call.
Director Shore.
Yes.
Director Borja.
Yes.
Director Perez-Teal.
Yes.
Director Roberts.
Yes.
Director Matthews.
Aye.
Vice President DeLara.
Yes.
President Zendo.
Yes. All right. Director's comments, and then we will be moving into a closed session to discuss a couple issues, but okay, I want to make one comment, and that's because it's something that is going to come up, and I think that we need to start talking about it, and I want to just make sure that the public knows we're talking about it. And that's the $10 million that was allocated through an MOU to CB Link about 6-7 years ago. And that issue is coming up now. The program committee is waiting for the specifics of the grant. What's the term for the grant? The MOU is approved, and now there's a grant application that talks about when the money's going to be spent and how it's going to be spent, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a very political issue. You're already reading about it in the newspaper. There will be things brought to the board, and I just wanted to let you all know about that and also to let the public know that that is an issue that's going to be coming to the healthcare district, and we'll talk about in the future. Any other comments before I adjourn? And I'm going to adjourn, and we'll move into.
I do have a question about that, which is, at the next meeting, we must bring the item to your attention. Typically, because there are two implications of this grant application, we would have to bring it to the program committee to understand whether the conditions and contingencies of the MOU that was signed many, many, many years ago have been met. And then there is the finance committee that needs to analyze the expenditure of $10 million from the monies that we have and all the contingencies that we have in that MOU. So the direction that we're seeking is whether we bring the entire packet directly to the board for discussion, or should we follow the two different committees?
Do you want me to weigh in?
Yeah, please weigh in, and I'll weigh in.
I walked into this one inadvertently. The this deals with the CB Link bike path, which was supposed to go to, from the Salton Sea all the way to Palm Springs. And in the portion within the Desert Healthcare District, years ago we approved, when we had a 5-member board with 3 cyclists on it, a $10 million grant to fund that portion. That grant contract has expired, much to the chagrin of Tom
Kurt.
He's not happy about that. But candidly, those of you in political leadership and whatever, the healthcare district doesn't have the kind of funds it used to have. They're winding down, and as its treasurer, I constantly am reminding my colleagues that the end is sooner than it appears, and the entire grant program could be at risk. And $10 million is an enormous amount of money, and a bike path may not be what the needs are today. And that should be debated, and candidly, it ought to be debated in other places and brought to here when there's a solution. I really don't want a big political fight here. I want to get resolved out in the community.
probably over at CVAG where all the public officials are, so you can weigh in on, is it more important to put in a bike trail, or is it more important to take care of people's health? This is the wrong place to bring it, in my view.
May I make a...
Yes.
Many years ago, this board approved the funding of $10 million for a CBA, and it's been proven that it directly affects the health of the community. I lived in San Francisco Bay Area, and the Bay Area bike path from Berkeley all the way around to San Francisco around the Bay was constantly used by people, and it was just a wonderful asset to have people get out and walk and bike and roller skate and push their baby carriage. So I see that as this as our responsibility. I would hate to see us renege on our commitment. I think that if that happens, the whole project is doomed, and I don't want to see that come back to the district. I don't want to see us do a precedent on when we grant funds and then to change our minds about it for anything in the future that doesn't have anything to do with bicycles. That's just my opinion.
Okay, I actually don't think that was the question that Conrado asked. No. I think Conrado asked, and I don't think this is the time to discuss it. Right. I think what Conrado asked, and this is what my recommendation is in terms of direction, is that rather that the committees, the finance committee, the program committee, can deal with the nuts and bolts after the board has discussed it as a whole with public comment. Mm-hmm. And decided in what direction it wants to go, and then it can go to my personal opinion. Would then it goes to the finance committee for contracting issues and the program committee to approve the nuts and bolts of it. But the concept, I think, needs to be talked about by the entire board and needs to be in public so that the public has a chance to give their opinion, and then we as a board need to say this is what we want to do, and then they do the nuts and bolts. That's what I think is the best way to do it. Anybody agree with that in terms of directing Conrado?
I agree.
Okay. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Meeting's adjourned. We're moving into closed session, so I appreciate if everybody could leave the room except the board members and our legal counsel.
If the contract expired, why wasn't there a
It's up to the board to decide.
Contract is expired.
Right.
So,
it could be done as a study session, or the point is it needs to be done.
Thank you.